The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You see, I didn't get stressed. I just listened to some calming, happy music. And then Neil arrived and he's at the end of the line, which is perfect. Neil Shah, the Chief De-Stressing Officer at the Stress Management Society. April is Stress Awareness Month, and who better to chat to? Good morning, Neil.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks. The sun's shining. It feels like the spring energy has arrived. People seem to have a bit more of a spring in their step. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah, it is good, isn't it? It seems like that there is a bit more positivity around. You know, there's obviously we've been coping in various different ways with this coronavirus this past year. There's been a lot of, I guess there has been a lot of stress. There's been a lot of upset. There's been a lot of anguish as to what's going on and when things are going to change. Things are starting to change, and I guess that's having an impact on people's moods.
Yes, but it has been a long time.
Yeah.
There is no small amount of time. And to be fair, when this all started, I was very much encouraging people to self-care, look after themselves, you know, do all the right things, like, you know, eat right, walk, meditate, you know, all of those kind of things. I think there's only so much self-care you can do. I think we've got to the point where people are tired. And we're starting to see that now. That tiredness is manifesting in people being much shorter, snappy, irritable. I've seen witness people just, you know, out in the streets, in the park, like screaming at each other because people are really on edge. You know, when you are going through a tough time, you can do that if there's light at the end of the tunnel for a defined period of time. But this has been going on for so long. I think we've got to the point now that there are a lot of people that are really struggling. And, you know, Stress Awareness Month has been around since 1992. I think this has been probably the most important one we've had. Given where we are and the uncertainty that we're facing, the amount of stress people have experienced over the last year, you know, three different studies, one of our own, has shown that the last year has been the most stressful in recorded history. Like more than 75% of people suggest that the stress they've experienced over the last year is more than they've ever experienced before. That's no surprise to anybody that's listening. But the challenges this time with the stress that we've experienced is the things that we'd normally do to make ourselves feel better have also been taken away from us. Because, you know, if you're having a stressful or a tough time, what would you do? You might go and see your friends. You might go out for a meal. You might go for a drink, go to the theatre, go on holiday, go to the gym. Can't do any of those things.
Yeah.
So it's a double whammy, higher stress, and all the coping mechanisms have been taken away. And that's just kind of at the top level. As we go deeper into it, it gets really concerning to understand sort of how this potentially may have a long-term hangover. Even if tomorrow we're told, you know, go back to live your best lives, I don't think people are going to forget very quickly.
No.
There are some people who have been very much templated by the fear, particularly children. If you're 9, 10, 11, 12 years of age, you probably won't remember what your life was like before this all started.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big, I thought a lot about children and teenagers, young people. You know, if we all think back to what we were doing and how much we were enjoying ourselves from, I don't know, the age of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, all those kind of years, how much we were seeing our friends, going out, meeting new people, socializing, to think of a whole year of that at that age being taken away from you is unimaginable.
It's more than that. For a lot of people, they've lost the opportunity for those first experiences. You know, that first snog behind the bike sheds, you know, your prom, your exams, your, you know, your seventh, eighth, ninth birthday. You know, how many kids have lost two birthdays of theirs? You're never going to get those back.
No.
Now, any child that has a significantly traumatic experience at a young age is potentially going to scar them for life, mentally and emotionally, right? We know this, you know, that children that have a traumatic experience in childhood affect their relationships, developmental opportunities, how they relate to others. We've done this to a generation of children globally. It's tragic. And you know, I don't see kind of campaigns being run on how we support these kids to reintegrate, because we've already had stories from teachers that kids came back to school and they're petrified of being around other people because they've been told for so long to be scared.
Yeah.
You know, when this is all over, you know, you've been telling kids for a year, don't hug granny because you're going to kill her, which for me is psychological warfare. That's really damaging some of the messages that have been put out.
Mm.
They're not going to forget that very quickly. How is this going to affect their ability to relate to other people? How is this going to affect their ability to move freely and you know, go out and socialize? I had my niece around about 6 weeks ago. She was here for 2 hours. She washed her hands, I counted, 27 times.
Oh, no. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. And I assume she wasn't like that before.
No, absolutely. She's a normal, happy, confident kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's very much been programmed by what's going on. And wrongly or rightly, these decisions are made. You know, there are certain decisions that are made which are going to have a significant impact. The UN Declaration of Human Rights, they're known as the inalienable human rights. These are the human rights that no government has the right to either grant nor take away. Most police forces around the world, when you step into the constabulary, take an oath to uphold, before anything else, natural law, which is human rights. People that join the military, again, you know, most forces around the world, they are stepping into that role in service of protecting human rights. Now, over the last year, in most countries around the world, our human rights were taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, it's not my job to argue whether that's right or wrong, but I am here to raise awareness of the fact that you take those away even for a short period of time, there will be consequences. That's why they're inalienable, because we recognize that a human being needs the freedom to move, freedom to express, freedom to travel, freedom to work. You know, all of these things are required for a human being to flourish and have optimal well-being. You take them away even for a short period of time, there will be challenges and consequences. They've been taken away for a year, and now it talks about that, you know, now what they're talking about in many countries around the world, you know, giving people passports to say, well, you are free, but you are a subculture that's not free because you've chosen not to, you know, participate in this, in this process. Now, again, my concern is, people should have the freedom of choice. If you want to, like, move and travel, you should have the freedom to do that. It shouldn't be taken away from you because you haven't participated in any particular process. And that's me where I feel that this fear that we have created is going to have a long-term psychological impact on people. So we really need to start taking action, number one, at a personal level, and number two, at a collective level. So what did we learn from our last study? The key factors for stress are people's loss of connection. The fact that we just aren't able to see our friends, our family, our colleagues, that's obviously having a significant impact. The lack of certainty. We don't know when this is going to end. We don't know if, you know, in many countries around the world, there is a lockdown, there's a threat of lockdown. Is this the last time? Are we over? Is the vaccination program going to give us a one-way ticket out of this or not? And that, because we've been kind of made certain promises and certain statements have made in the past which weren't upheld, I think people have lost faith a little bit, so we've lost certainty. And the other thing is, there's a real sense of powerlessness. The lack of control over our circumstances.
Yeah.
We don't have freedom to decide what to do, when to do it, who to do it with, and even what to wear whilst you're doing it. So that's why the theme for this year's Stress Awareness Month is to regain certainty, control, and connection. Now, as much as we may not be able to decide what's happening beyond ourselves, we might not be able to kind of influence decisions that are happening at a macro level, you can decide how you are going to react and respond, how you are going to show up. That's the bit that's firmly within our control. That's something that no one can take away from you. So that's really what we're focused on this year, is to be able to support people in regaining that sense of control, to be able to experience that sense of connection again, because many of us are feeling very disconnected. There's a huge sense of polarity where people are turning on each other, different views, different perspectives. Some people are, you know, Brexit, Remain, mask, no mask, vaccine, no vaccine, pandemic, plandemic. Like, at the end of the day, what happens to the world where you could just agree to disagree, where you can have your perspective and I can have mine? It seems like that's completely lost. If you don't agree with me, you are the enemy and you must die. I don't understand how we got to that point. So again, part of this whole process of regaining connection, the only way we're going to truly find solutions to the challenges we're facing is by coming together, not turning on each other.
Mm. Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it? It's true that there's either, it seems like there's either people who are just happy to believe what they're told and just, you know, are quite vocal in saying, just wear a mask. You know, I'm happy, you know, if we can only go and meet people on a Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock for an hour, then I'll do it. You know, whatever, I'll do what I'm told. Just do it. It's not difficult. You know, that kind of opinion. Or people who are saying, hold on a second, but this isn't right and it doesn't make sense. How can it be safe to meet people on a Wednesday afternoon for an hour, but on a Thursday afternoon, it's a problem? It doesn't make sense, and yet they're branded conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers, and it's just it's totally makes sense to question these things. I don't understand how people aren't.
And Hannah, I think that's what troubles me. We can't question anymore. Like, how did we arrive at a point by asking a question or trying to engage in discussion or debate is seen as dangerous? I've had to come off social media. I'm hardly on Facebook anymore because I was like literally getting abused. I even had a couple of death threats, and I was like, "This is crazy." I'm posting my opinion on my platform. I think I should have the freedom to do that, but not anymore. And it's not just other people that are abusing me. Like, I've had a lot of my posts taken off Facebook, like because of broken community standards. One really shocked me because I was talking about the vitamin C and vitamin D are probably one of the best things that we can do to protect ourselves in the face of the viral risk that we're currently facing, and that post was taken down for breaking community standards.
Wow.
So I like, at the end of the day, like, I want to be able to have discussions and debate. And also, I want to talk to people that disagree with my perspective. I think that's great. I think that's healthy. But to be able to have that in a sensible, rational, adult way, not to be like screaming and shouting at people. And I think that's what really concerns me, is the fact that people aren't questioning. They're just going along with it. When we had the 10 o'clock curfew, which was the most ridiculous thing. It's like, if everybody comes out of the bars and restaurants at 10 o'clock, like, that's actually worse than people coming out when they naturally close
exactly.
at staggered times.
When it's staggered, people come out different times.
is it like the virus is clever and knows not to attack you at 10 o'clock? Or,
yeah.
or you can only have 6 people at a wedding, but you can have 20 people at a funeral because the virus knows it's a funeral, so it respects that. It's just like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think at the beginning, people were kind of asking questions because it just didn't make sense. A year in, we now have data. It's not like even asking questions and challenging the narrative because it just doesn't feel right. A lot of this can be backed up with data, even public and national level data. But that's the other thing. It's like, people don't even read the data. They just read what they see on mainstream media. They see the round-the-clock tickers. What they don't see is the data in other issues, like the amount of people that are dying of cancer and heart disease because they're not getting treatment, they're not getting screened. All the elective surgeries that were cancelled, because ultimately elective means that at the time it was booked, it may not have been life-threatening, but if you didn't treat that person at that point, is it going to become a more serious issue further down the line? How many people that weren't treated early enough are going to have serious, potentially life-threatening or life-changing issues later down the line? Or the other one, which nobody wants to talk about, is the mental health and the amount of people that take their own lives. That was an issue long before the pandemic hit. You know, where suicide was the main cause of death for a man under the age of 45. We've spoken about this before, you know, a couple of years ago. I remember, like, one of the first interviews we spoke about how much of an issue this was. It hasn't got better. I'm sorry to say this, but when you basically, for the vast majority of people across Europe, that are not living in seven-bedroom mansions and, you know, haven't got millions in the bank, like, if you are relying on your wage at the end of the month to pay the bills, it's only going to get to a point where you're going to start to struggling, even if you've got a little bit of, furlough or government money coming in. You'll get to the point where the vast majority of people have lost financially significantly, which has had an impact on their day-to-day lives. We don't necessarily hear from a lot of those people because they don't necessarily always have a voice. But, you know, if you live in a one-bedroom flat and you've got a couple of kids and kind of you work in a hotel bar or restaurant, a cinema, or, you know, the hospitality industry, in sport, you haven't been able to work for the last year. And that potentially is going to have a tragic impact on your life. And I think that's where, because a lot of people that we hear from, particularly in the media, are what I would describe as, before I say this, actually, I'm going to put myself in this category because I would consider myself one of these people, and that's champagne lockdowners. And I know that sounds like a derogatory term, but you know, the reason I say that is I have a four-bedroom house. I have been able to work, nowhere near as much as I used to, but I'm able to pay the bills. I'm okay. You know, I can feed myself. I can look after myself. My life continues. And that's the case for a lot of people. But there are for every person that will be in that situation, there's probably four or five people that are not.
Mm.
And because some of the programs that we run are directly interacting with those kind of people, we're seeing the tragedy and the loss that those people are experiencing. We're experiencing how painful it's becoming. We're experiencing, witnessing sort of the rise in things like domestic violence, which has gone up 1,500% reported cases of domestic violence because people are stressed and they're locked at home with potentially the person that you'd wanted to escape from.
Yeah.
You know, children being abused both physically and in many other guys. The number of children that have been murdered by their parents has increased. Now, again, I don't see this reported in the papers in the same way we've got the round-the-clock ticker telling you to be absolutely petrified. And what I am saying is, yes, we need to be careful and we need to be careful in the face of the public health risk that we're being told about. But we shouldn't be ignoring all the other public health and social risks that are affecting our society because we put all our eggs in one basket. That doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
Particularly when it's still not even in the top 10 killers of people people in Europe.
Yeah.
There are other things that kill us that we just don't we're not concerned about.
But we're led to believe that that is the most dangerous thing and that is the thing that is more likely to kill us than anything else, and it's simply not true.
And exactly, yes, if you're a certain demographic, if you're of a certain age, or you've got underlying health conditions, yes, it's a very serious risk. But normal flu would potentially be a very serious risk. Mm. Diarrhea would be a potentially very serious risk to people of those demographics. Road traffic accidents are still, you know, a major cause of premature death. Are we taking everyone's cars away? It would be like the same kind of reaction that we would take for all the other things that are likely to impact us. Are we kind of taking the same approach? No. So it's like, okay, when this started, we needed to be careful because there was a potential consequence of it getting completely out of control. We are a year in. And if we haven't been able to figure out the lockdowns don't work, and they clearly don't because we're on the third one, and particularly in Britain, this one's lasted 6 months. If it worked, why are we on the third one?
Mm.
Again, according to the World Health Organization, at the first point of lockdown, you are literally using that to buy yourself the time to come up with a longer-term strategy, whatever that might be. That's not what we did. We used that one, then we opened up for summer, and then everyone got it again, so we closed down again, and then that didn't work so well, so we just closed down again, and we don't know what's going on, so we're just going to keep it closed until something happens, or the vaccine works, or, you know, maybe it just goes away. It's just like, you've taken people's freedoms and liberties away for a year.
Mm.
My local high street is more boarded up than it is open. Like 75% of the shops are open. The only ones that are left open are the big chains.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same here in Spain. Absolutely.
All the independents are gone.
Yeah.
So who's benefiting here? The rich are getting richer, right? This is not clear. Conspiracy theory. Look up World Economic Forum's website, Klaus Schwab. Very clearly talks about in 5 years' time, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. This is the guy that runs Davos, and he has the leaders of business and political leaders from around the world that turn up. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if we don't own anything, who's going to own everything? Well, it's from looking at my high street, it seems like the big corporations are benefiting because we're still buying our Amazon. We're still going to all the big chains that we used to shop at, and most of them will survive. But it's everybody else is going to suffer, and that's... Mm. That's tragic.
Yeah.
That's really tragic because, any economy is typically 70-75% small industry, small businesses. If they're gone, then what happens? It's a concentration of wealth and power, and we basically just are now waiting for someone to feed us every month.
Mm.
And that's what freedom is to be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
Neil, I'm totally with you, and we could keep going for hours and hours and hours, but unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there. But I must refer people to your website because there's lots of information and advice for people who are feeling particularly stressed at this time and sadly understandably so, but there is lots of advice on your website. Just tell everyone how to find it.
Yeah, actually, we've put something specific together for Stress Awareness Month in light of what we've just said. It is tools, resources, information, videos. It's like tons and tons of specific resources plus a 30-day challenge. So you've got kind of a program sort of on a daily basis for the next 30 days. You can start to build your resilience and prepare yourself for whatever the future looks like, the future abnormal, new normal, or whatever they call it these days. And you can find that at www.stress.org/stress-awareness-month. So I encourage everyone, use this month of April to really start to build the capacity and the resilience so we are ready for whatever's yet to come.
Definitely. Oh, Neil, thank you so, so much. Big hugs.
Yeah, you too. It's always so lovely talking to you.
And
have
you.
Have a wonderful day.
You too, Neil. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.